You must have heard the phrase Tattvamasi that thou art. Tattvamasi that thou art. What do we mean by that? This has been talked before by other teachers when it refers to the Bhagavad Gita, but just to briefly summarize, the teacher tells the student that consciousness, that Bhagavan, that God that you think is far away, is not far from you, but you are that, Tvam Asi, thou art, you are that. And we'll talk about this more today, that God is not somebody separate or far from us, but is our own self. And so that understanding is covered in the entire Bhagavad Gita. The first six chapters talk about thou, Tvam, that is me, us, who are we? So the first six chapters tell us how we should live our life, do karma yoga, service, and all that. So that is the first six chapters. And chapters 7 to 12 talk about God, Bhagavan, that God, that consciousness which we think far away is my own self, my own nature. And then 13th to 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita talk about the relationship, how I and that God can become one, what is the process and where God is. So all that is explained in the 18 chapters. And I think others, we have covered this before in the Gita class, but today's three shlokas are very interesting. They also cover Tattvamasi, that consciousness you are. That is what is covered in these three verses. So the entire, this Upanishad mantra, that Tattvamasi, this very famous mantra, will be covered in today's verses. So it is a wonderful opportunity for us to understand that mantra, how I can be that. And as we have studied so far, after telling us about the technique of meditation, the obstacles, last week we heard from Bhagavan Sri Krishna the joy experienced by a meditator, by an enlightened sage, how he atyantikam sukham, the joy that he experiences, paramananda, it is the highest joy, sukham uttamam, all those adjectives Bhagavan uses to tell us that if you want to experience that highest joy, experience it within. Joy in objects is fleeting. So today let us cover these three verses which tell us that having now meditated, what does the meditator experience? What is his life and how does he then conduct his life? Very, very beautiful verses. So verse number 29, chapter 6, verse number 29. Sarva bhutastham atmanam. Sarva bhutani chatmani. Ikshate yoga yuktatma. Sarvatra samadarshanaha. Sarva bhutastham atmanam. Sarva bhutani chatmani. Ikshate yoga yuktatma. Sarvatra samadarshanaha. So, what is the experience of this meditator? I or us, as we evolve in this. So, sarva bhutastham atmanam. Atma here means the consciousness, Om. Is everybody familiar with this chart? Nobody is unfamiliar. So this Atma, the Om, the consciousness, Sarva Bhutastham. Sarva Bhuta means all beings. Beings means not only human beings, but animals, birds, plants, fish, all living beings. Sarva Bhutastham. Stham means established. This Atma, this consciousness, I. That I, because I think of myself as this body, but the teachers tell us your true nature is I, that consciousness. So that consciousness, sarva bhutastham atmanam, all in all beings, this atma, this consciousness is stationed, is established. And sarva bhutani, and all beings, cha means and atmani, in the self. So here the self is not somebody separate, but my own nature. So this consciousness that is established in me, in that consciousness all beings reside. So there is only one consciousness, there is only one atma. It's not that my atma is different from yours or yours. There is a jivatma, which is the transmigratory soul, but the consciousness, the essential nature, om, is one in all beings. There is only one. And you can call that Brahman, you can call that Father in heaven, you can call it Allah, you can call it that total consciousness that is one and that is reflecting in all different beings. So this life principle is there in every being. So all beings are in that Atma. This Atma is in all beings and all beings are in this Atma, but that Atma is me, is not separate from me. Sarva bhutastam atmanam, sarva bhutani cha atmani, ikshate yoga yukta atma. Ikshate means he sees. Who sees? Yoga yukta. Yoga yukta means one who is established in this knowledge and has meditated in meditation, dhyana yoga. This individuality, atma, sarvatra, everywhere samadarshana. Then he sees the same. Equanimity everywhere. Because when everybody is that one Atma, then how can I have any distinction or differences? So, all in me, when the Mahatma says all in me, it is not an egoistic statement. It's not that I am God, but I am the consciousness that is my true nature. And not only I am in that consciousness, the whole universe is. Everything is in that one consciousness. And I am not separate from this consciousness. So all are in me. And that is what we have to practice, that when we sit down, not only for meditation, but when you're looking around and you say that this consciousness, that is my true nature. If I am that consciousness, then that one consciousness is everywhere. Then everything is in that consciousness and that consciousness is in everything. So what does that mean? Everybody is divine. All are divine. There is nobody who is not divine. Yes, some of the divinity is covered by negative vasanas, and because of that they have negative actions, negative thoughts. And we all to some extent have this covering of these vasanas over our divinity. So the extent of evolution of an individual is to the extent his vasanas become less and he becomes more and more one with that consciousness. So the Lord within shines as we reduce our selfishness, reduce our vasanas, the Lord within us shines, and then you understand, oh, I am divine. I am not unholy. I am not a creature of sin, but I am a holy being. But this cannot be, even though right now we are talking about it, we are discussing it, but cannot be understood by the intellect. Intellectually, right now we say, oh, I have understood, I am divine. But we don't have that true understanding, that true experience. Right now, when I'm saying we are all divine, it is Swami Chinmayananda's teaching, you know, from this textbook. Or it is Ved Vyasji's teaching, or it is Bhagavan Sri Krishna's teaching who was giving it to Arjuna. It is not your and my understanding because we have not reached that state of evolution. So the intellect can take us to a point, but then beyond that you have to go beyond the intellect. The intellect cannot reach that highest state of enlightenment. They say, well, then why should we do it? Because that is the only equipment we have. Only equipment we have given to us is intellect. The mind is emotions. The body cannot see. God cannot be seen by eyes, cannot be thought of, but can be experienced as within, as I. So the intellect will take us to a point, and then in your meditation, you transcend the intellect and then you reach. So intellect is the only equipment. Like the mouth is the only equipment for the baby, right? Now the baby is crawling. She's crawling. She's 4, 5, 6 months. I don't know what age do they start crawling. I forget now, but 6 months or 7 months. And so she's crawling, and the only equipment for her is mouth, right? So everything they put in the mouth, any dirt in the mouth, any paper in the mouth, pin in the mouth. As a gastroenterologist, I have removed pins, I have removed sharp needles, so many things, magnets. You know, people, I don't know how these kids get into all these things. And so they swallow everything, and then we have to go and take it out. So for that baby, the only equipment, because what she knows, because milk, see, she drinks the milk. So for her, or eats food. So anything she wants to experience, what it is, she puts it in the mouth. So same way, for us, the only equipment we have is the intellect. But this, what Swami Chinmayananda says, that once in your meditation, you experience this oneness with this reality, this Brahman, that I am that, then it is very easy to see outside. You can, one way is you can say, okay, everything is God. Next verse we'll talk about, everything is God. I see God everywhere. That is good. Or you say, I see God within. And once you experience that and you have clearly seen that, then it becomes very easy. But for that, the right knowledge is very important. The right understanding, the right communication. The teacher has to communicate this knowledge which is beyond the intellect to a student who's trying to use the intellect. So proper communication is very important. This reminds me of a story. I don't know if I told this or not, but there was this brother who was living in New York, and his other, the two brothers were living together, and one of them moved to Los Angeles. And the brother who moved to Los Angeles had a very dear cat that he loved, but he had to leave her in New York because there was no place in Los Angeles for the cat. So he left her, and after 2-3 months, he got an email from the brother in New York. Your cat was on the roof. They were in one of the suburbs, not in Manhattan. And so your cat was up on the roof, and she tripped and fell, and she died. So he got a shock, you know, because this was his dear cat. He had been seeing her for, you know, with him for 10 years. And he wrote back to his, no, he called his brother. He says, you know, that's a horrible way. You just told me my cat fell off and died. I got a shock. I almost had a heart attack. So, well, I'm sorry. That's what happened. He says, that's not how you do it. You should have told me an email first. Your cat was on the roof and we are trying to get her down. Your cat is on the roof. And then second day, you should have sent an email. Your cat fell off the roof, but we took her to the vet. And she will recover. And third day, you could have sent an email, sorry, your cat didn't make it, and your cat died. So that's the way, you know, you gently break it. You don't shock somebody like that. It was terrible. I couldn't sleep all night. So brother says, okay, I got it. I'm sorry. After 2 months, brother in New York sends an email, grandma is on the roof, and we are trying to get her down. Proper communication. So you have to clearly explain what you intend, and that's the goal of all these teachings. The teachers are trying to teach us what is this highest truth in our own language. Just as when you talk to a child, you don't talk to them, you know, with high words. You talk to them in language they can understand. A 5 or a 6 year old, you don't tell him a squared equals b squared and square of the hypotenuse. No, you tell them that in a triangle, you know, one side is long, or, you know, so you talk to them in simple words. Now, seeing this divinity, there is a very beautiful story of Yudhishthira. I'm sure most of you have heard it. The story of the dog, has everybody heard? No? Okay, it's a very nice story. So the Pandavas, after they had ruled the kingdom for many years, and after they had defeated the Kauravas, then they got old, and so they gave the kingdom to their grandson, Parikshit, Abhimanyu's son. And so the 5 Pandavas with Draupadi, all 6 of them were very old by then. And so they said, we need to give up our body. So they went and meditated for a while in the forest. And when the final time came, they knew that our final time has come. They said, we all need to walk towards heaven. So they were going to physically walk to heaven. I guess they had that much spiritual power. So they started walking. So there was a mountain, this Meru mountain that they were climbing. And so as the mountain was very steep, Draupadi fell first. But what Yudhishthir found, there was a dog that was accompanying them right from the beginning. From where this dog came, he didn't know. From somewhere he appeared. So the dog was walking behind. So they said, let him walk. So Draupadi fell. She couldn't walk. Then Sahadev, Nakul, they all fell and they passed away where they were. They were old anyway. Arjuna fell. Even Bhim, the mighty Bhim, also fell. And Yudhishthir, because he had great spiritual power, he kept on walking up all the way to the top of the mountain and he reached the gate of heaven. And this dog was with him. Still, the dog didn't fall. So the Dwarpala, the guard went to Indra very quickly. You know what? Yudhishthir is here, the great Yudhishthir, the one who was... Can you close it fully, please? The one who was the symbol of, you know, truth and purity, that great Yudhishthir is here. Let's go. So Indra comes running to receive him because, I mean, for him, the gates of heaven are always open. And so he said, oh, Yudhishthir, you are here. Welcome. Come, enter. We are so happy to have you here. Because Yudhishthir was a very noble soul throughout his life. So as he entered, the dog was following through the gate. So Indra said, wait. Dog cannot come. No dogs are allowed. No dogs. Humans can enter. If dog wants to enter heaven, he has to give up this life, go through all his yonis, become a human. Then and only then he can enter heaven. So sorry, you have to leave the dog outside. Yudhishthir said, this dog came with me all the way, this whole trip. I don't care where he came from. Dogs are not allowed. If you want the dog to enter, you cannot enter heaven. If you want, you have to enter alone and leave the dog behind. If you want the dog, then you also go. He said, if this dog doesn't go with me, I'm not coming either. I'm going. I'll go anywhere, but I won't enter heaven if my dear... And he walked out. He turned around. He said, close the gates. I'm leaving. He turned around. And as he started walking, the dog became Yamaraj, Dharmaraj, his father. He was testing him to see how much, you know. So the point was that Yudhishthir could see that in this dog also, there is a divinity. And that is what we have to learn from this, that there is a divinity in all creatures, whether dogs, cats, birds, fish, you know, everybody, plants. So we learn to respect all, love all. And also, killing an animal for my food is forbidden. It's wrong, because then this same divinity that is there in me is also in that animal. And if I'm killing that animal for me to eat, then that is also wrong. And the idea is that just as a person who knows electricity, now, if when he sees a bulb, he might see a huge bulb like you see on the stadium, or he might see a small night light, or he might see a blue light or a green light or a yellow light or a red light. But he knows there is one electricity through all. Once you know electricity, you know all electrical appliances, everything. So same way, once you know the Atma within, then you know the Atma everywhere. Then you know that there is one Atma, and then everybody is a manifestation. Just as electricity is playing through all these instruments, so my beloved Lord or this Atma is playing through all beings. And just as a dreamer, when he's dreaming and when he wakes up, then he realizes that in his ignorance he was dreaming. So same way, you and I at this moment are in this world which we think is very real. But when you wake up to that higher reality, then you realize that this world was just a dream and I was playing a part. So that we have talked many times. And how do we see this knowledge? So they said with the third eye of wisdom. That's why in Lord Shiva's picture, you always see a third eye. You know, the Gyan Chakshu. We all have this third eye, but it is closed. This Gyana Chakshu means this eye of knowledge. So we only have these two fleshy eyes to see from. But a wise person, through his eye of wisdom, it does not mean that there is an eye that starts growing, but through his eye of wisdom, he or she is able to see the Atma everywhere, the consciousness. So that's why in the meditation, they always talk about opening the third eye, and that's the Gyan Chakra, you know, the Agnya Chakra, what they call. So there are the six chakras. So the Agnya Chakra is the one that is the focus of knowledge. And there is a very famous saying in Bhagavad Gita, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmani Gavi Hastini Shunicha Shvapakecha Pandita Samadarshina. So when we say all are divine, so Pandit means a wise person. Suppose there are five things in front of him. There is a Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahman. There is a Brahman. There is a very learned person. Brahman does not mean the caste, but a learned person who has knowledge and humility. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne. See, most people, when they get knowledge, they get arrogant. But this wise person has knowledge and humility. Then there is a cow. There is a she elephant and there is a dog. And the fifth one is a dog eater, you know, one who kills dog and eats. So that is considered to be a very low kind of individual who would eat dogs. So he sees all five in front of them. He sees the same in all. He sees God in all of them, whether it's the Brahman or whether it's the dog or the elephant or the cow or even the lowest human being. That does not mean that he treats everybody equal. It does not mean, you know, that the wise Brahman comes, he will, you know, wash his feet, call him to the house, give him some food respectfully. If a dog comes, he's not going to wash the dog's feet and say, oh, Paramatma dog, Maharaja Pandarao. No, he knows, okay, dog, yeah, he will give him some food and very respectfully send him away, but he's not going to. So he treats people based on what they are treated, need to be treated, but he sees God in all. Does not mean that if there is a man or a woman, he says, I don't know whether you are a man or woman, I only see Krishna. No, he can tell, okay, this is a man, this is a woman, this is a tree, this is a dog. But each one needs to be treated with love and divinity. So like wave, you know, how Atma can be in the self, like wave is in the water, right? Wave is in the water. And where is the water? Water is in the wave. So wave is in the water, water is in the wave. So that means Atma is in the being and all beings are in Atma. So it's the same translation. You understand? I'm trying to give various examples to kind of make this concept clear. And the idea how this individual treats all, it's like, how do I treat my body? Now, do I love my finger more than my eye or more than my foot? No. I love all equally. My finger is as important as my eye, as my foot, as every part of my body, my mouth, every part of my body is important. And I love all parts equally. Even if one part, you know, has some ulcer, very painful ulcer in my foot, and the doctor says, we have tried all medicine, it's not going to work, I need to cut it off. It's very painful, it's causing a lot of pain. I said, no, I don't want it cut. You cannot cure? Okay, I'll go to homeopathy. Or I'll go to alternative medicine. Or I'll go to Ayurveda. I'll try anything and everything to say, even though that foot is giving me pain, it is me. It is my foot. It is me. So similarly, for a wise person, all beings are the same. Even those that give him pain, he still loves them. And that is the difference between us and a saint, because we are very selective. I love this one. I don't like this one. But for a saint, even the one giving him, torturing him or punishing him, or harassing him, he still has love. So that is the universal love of this individual who has understood that all beings are in me as the Atma, as the consciousness. So that is very hard. Yeah. I can't say all of them are in me. You know, I'm only here. You mean all the stars are in me, all the planets are in me? I don't understand that. Bhagavan, can you make it simpler? Please make it a little easier. That's too hard. All those examples you gave, but still not easy. Bhagavan says, okay, do you agree that all beings are in God? Say, yeah, that I have no problem. This fan is in God, the star is in God. Yeah, that, why didn't you say that first? That would have been easier. Bhagavan says, okay, I'll make it easy for you. So the next verse, he makes it easy for us, where he says, God is in everything and everything is in God. That is easier for us to understand. So verse number 30, यो मां पश्यति सर्वत्र सर्वं च मयि पश्यति तस्याहं न प्रणश्यामि स च मे न प्रणश्यति. टुगेदर यो मां पश्यति सर्वत्र सर्वं च मयि पश्यति तस्याहं न प्रणश्यामि स च मे न प्रणश्यति. सो व्हेन भगवान श्री कृष्ण इन द गीता ही यूजेस द वर्ड आई, व्हेन ही यूजेस द वर्ड आई ही इज नॉट टॉकिंग अबाउट द सन ऑफ देवकी एंड वासुदेव, द वन विद द peacock feather, the beloved of Radha. He's talking about I, that supreme consciousness, because Bhagavan Sri Krishna was a manifestation of the supreme consciousness. That's what we believe. So when he's talking about I, he's talking about the total consciousness, not only the Sri Krishna in this visible form, but the total consciousness. So when he says Yaha Mam Pashyati Sarva, Yaha is a pronoun in Sanskrit, which means whoever that person may be, whoever it may be, male or female, young or old, short or tall, black or white, whoever that individual, child, grown up, whoever that individual is, mam pashyati, me, Bhagavan Sri Krishna says, one who sees me sarvatra, who sees God everywhere. So when he says me, what he means? God. So he says, one who sees God everywhere, and sarvam cha mai pashyati, and sees all sarvam cha mai in me, pashyati seeds. So one who sees me everywhere and sees everything is me, in me, that means one who sees God everywhere and sees everything in God, right? That's why they say, na, God is within and without. Antar bahishcha tat sarvam vyapta narayana tishthati. So the Lord is within as life and Lord is outside. They say, where is God? Wise person will say, where is God not? Where is he not? Show me a place where he's not. He's everywhere. He's there in space between us. He's there in the chair. He's there in the mic. He's there in the trees, in the air, in even trillions of miles away in space. He even goes beyond that, further than that. So God is everywhere. So yo mam pashyati sarvam cha mai pashyati tasyaham na pranashyami. For him I'm never lost. I'm never separated from him. Sacha mena pranashyati. I never lose him and he never loses me. So Bhagavan Sri Krishna says that if you want me to be with you, I am with you at all times. But just see me everywhere. See me in all beings and see me within. And that's all you need to do. God is there everywhere. Our problem is we don't see him or her. God can be Mother Saraswati, can be Mother Durga. So male or female, God is not only male or female. That's why we say God is consciousness or Brahman, which is neuter. So to see the whole world in God and God in the whole world is easier for us. So what Bhagavan is saying, that God within you is also the God outside. There are no two separate gods. It's not that there is a God within and there is a God outside. So you see them both as one. And what is God? So they say he is Desh, Kala, Vastu. That means Desha means in all places he is there. He is everywhere, even in heaven, even in hell, even in the furthest of space, even he goes beyond that. Kala means time. That means he is there in the past. He was always there. They say, when did God start? Always. There was never a time when God was created. Because if God was created, then who created God? So we say he is self-created, always was, and is here now, and will always be in the future. No, even when the universe ends and the new universe is created, the Big Bang again happens, God will always be there. And Vastu. Vastu means in all objects. All objects, whether living or non-living, always God is there. But why don't we see God? We say it is a superimposition, just as there is a brown clay, right? Brown lump of clay. And what the pot maker does, he makes it into a pot, which was a lump of clay, now a beautiful pot. Then he colors it blue and gold and makes it, you know, hard in that, with that, bakes it in the oven. And now that brown piece of clay looks like a beautiful blue vase, you know, with gold and flowers, and you can't recognize. But it is that same clay, but now has a name and form. It is called pot, with the blue color, the brown. Then you can call it a plate or a saucer or a, you know, or a vase. These are all names and forms. And you don't see the original clay. You see the names and forms which are projected. So in all of us, that same Brahman is there, but superimposed are this name and form, that I am Anil, or my name is Vivek, or my name is Tony, and I am a male or a female, or I am a young or an old. These are all descriptions of the BMI. But the Atma, though, is the consciousness, is the same. The body is different, the emotions are different, ideas are different. And how does God create the world? So they say to create anything, need an efficient cause, instrumental cause, and a material cause. Just to come back to the pot maker, or the pot maker knows how to make the pot. You and I don't. This I'm talking about before factories, you know, where they used to have that rotating wheel and the pot maker used to make the pot. So he's the efficient cause because he knows how to make a pot. You and I don't. And what is the instrument? The instrument is the wheel on which he rotates. And what is the material cause? Is clay, right? So the efficient cause is the pot maker. The instrument cause is the wheel. And the material cause is the clay. In the case of Bhagwan, in the case of Brahman, who is the efficient cause? Who is the one who had the knowledge to create? He did, right? Or that consciousness, that Brahman, God, he had this knowledge. So he is the efficient cause. Is there any other instrument? No, he himself used himself to create. So he became the instrumental cause. Now, where did he get the material? It's not that there was some air, space, fire, water, earth lying around somewhere and he went and brought it. If he went and brought it, then who created that air, space, fire, water, earth? He himself. He himself became air, space, fire, water, earth. So he became the material cause. So all three are him. He's the efficient cause. He's the instrumental cause. He's the material cause. So everything is that. And that is the understanding that we get. And this world is an abhas. It is an appearance. But if you look deep within, there is only one. That's why Vedanta is called Advaita. That means no two. There are no two. There is only one Brahman appearing as all of us. So even though I think I'm separate from him and her, but actually there is only oneness. And in that case, God can never be separate from me, right? If God says tomorrow, I don't want to be with you, he can't because he's everywhere. And tomorrow if I say, God, it's okay, don't just go away now, let me do my, I can't because, so neither I can separate from God nor God can separate from me. Tasyahamna pranashyami sachamena pranashyati. He never separates from me and I never separate from him. So that understanding that God is with us 24 hours, 365 days, day in, day out, from and constantly functioning. It is his energy that is why I am at this moment able to speak. And that is why you all are able to listen. So the Bhagavat bhakti should be there, Bhagavat is understanding. It's like you go to a museum, right? And there is a statue of God, you know, Nataraja. But they say, you know, oh, this is a 12th century statue. It is a 13th century statue. Or there is an old, very old statue of Mother Mary or Jesus. You say, ah, this is 7th century, you know, and this is all that. Now it's in a museum. You don't say this is God. Right? You say this is a statue in a museum. But the same statue, if you take it into a temple and you do that pran pratishtha and you establish it in the temple or in the church and you start praying to it, then that same statue becomes God. But there, once you see the statue in the temple, you don't ask, when was this made? Is this 12th century or 13th century or 8th century? No. Once it is, this Bhagavat Drishti is there, that this is God. So the point is that that understanding should be there in both situations. Whether the statue was in the museum or is in the temple, there is only one God. But you and I, we have lost connection with God. The saints have not. The lost connection is like you're talking to somebody on the cell phone and then suddenly you lose the call, right? Drop the call. You say, oh, I lost the connection. You say, sorry, I lost my cell service. I'm no longer, you know, I'm out of range or whatever. Or like I'm talking to you and some of you are listening and somebody else is thinking, you know, I wonder what is for lunch. Or, you know, after this class, where am I going to go? So I've lost connection with you, even though you are sitting here listening, but your mind is thinking somewhere else. So lost connection means you are still here, but you are no longer listening or paying attention. Or like a father says, I've lost connection with my son. Son is still in the same house, but he can't talk. You know, this is what happens when they become teenagers. They think they know everything and dad knows nothing. And sometimes there is so much problem and they go into marijuana and drugs and all, and then they don't listen to anybody. So father said, I've lost connection with my son. Even though he's seeing him every day, that connection is lost. So similarly, even though God is with us every time, we have lost connection. All we have to do is connect our cell phone to him, you know, just get that Wi-Fi service. And he's always available. His Wi-Fi is always available. All we have to do is put in the password. And what is the password? Chant the name of the Lord, read the Bhagavad Gita, and you will connect with him. So that is the password. That's what Bhagavan Sri Krishna is giving us, the password to his Wi-Fi. He says, read the Bhagavad Gita, worship me, remember me, love me, and I am always there for you. And so the knowledge is aparoksh. It is not paraoksh means somebody else's eyes. So like this book has been written by Swami Chinmayanandaji. If you don't have it, everybody, I would request you to buy this one or the red one from the office because it has the word by word meaning. So right now, the knowledge we have is Swami Chinmayanandaji's knowledge, what I'm trying to give you, and I try to get some other ideas. But when I understand it is my knowledge, that is called aparoksha gyan. Right now, it is Bhagavan Sri Krishna's knowledge or Swami Chinmayananda's knowledge or Ved Vyasji's knowledge. But when it becomes my knowledge, that is called enlightenment, that is called realization. And does God have form or formless? You know, there is always an argument. They say, well, how about Sri Krishna, you know, playing the flute, or Ramchandarji with his bow and arrow, or Vishnu in Bhagavan in the Shiv Sagar, you know, he's lying there, or how about Jesus, or how about, you know, all those forms. So we say forms are good. Forms are meant for me to love, because it is hard to love a formless God. So you pick a form. Maybe it's Shiva, maybe it's Mother Saraswati. Whatever form is the dearest to you, you love it, but then don't say that God is only in this form. See, that is where the problem comes. When they say this alone is God and everybody else who does not believe in this God should be killed. And that is fanaticism. That is the breed of fanaticism. That any, whoever does not worship my God deserves to be killed. No, I worship my God. You worship your God. God is one, but there are different forms, different names. And see the oneness. And yes, I love a particular form. Nothing wrong with that. And you love that form. But in that form, you see formlessness. And Bhagavan Sri Krishna should lead me to that formless Brahman. I should not only limit it. Okay, itna hi hai. It's only this form, only in this temple, only this shape. No, God is everywhere, but I see him in this form. So that is the difference. So they say form should lead you to the formless. Because if he's in everything, if he's in the chair, if he's in this, he has to be formless. But God cannot be with form. It is formless, but takes particular forms for us to love. And so that I have to understand. That God is formless, but takes a particular form that I love. And that's why we have all these forms here. We have Sri Krishna. We have Ganpati here. We have Mother Saraswati. to show us that there is all multiple forms. And what are the four type of devotees? I will just briefly talk about it. I don't know if everybody can see, it's written in the bottom, but Bhagavan Sri Krishna says four type of devotees come to me. And how should we approach God? So they say Aarti, Artharthi, Jigyasu, Jignyasu, and Gyani. So Aarti means one who is suffering. Aarti does not mean the Aarti we do, but Aarti in Sanskrit means the one who is suffering. So I'm suffering, I'm sick. Oh God, give me in health, or make my son well. My son is not well, or my parents are sick. So when you go, or I'm unhappy, you know, my husband is not right, or my wife is not right, or my relationships are having problems. So whenever there is suffering, you go to God and say, please relieve my suffering. So that is one. Second is Artharthi, where you go to pray for what? Give me more money, God. Give me more power. I know this job I want. Oh, please, God, give me this job. If you give me this job, I'll come and give $100 in your temple. The job pays $100,000, right? So he says, for $100,000 job, I'll give you $100 next week. You know, that's how we bargain with God. So that is called Artharthi, where you're going to God. You're not going to God for God, but using God to get something else. So God becomes the instrument and the goal is higher. Like I use a rope to pull what I want, right? So the rope is the instrument and something I'm pulling is what I want. Like something is thrown in the river, you put a rope and you pull it. The rope you don't want. Rope is meant to get that. So Bhagavan we don't need. Bhagavan we need to get something else. That is the second quality. And the third is Jignyasu. Jignyasu are the philosophers and the professors and the PhDs who study Upanishads. They know Bhagavad Gita. They can chant. They know Sanskrit. But they are not doing it to reach God. They are doing it to get a PhD. Okay, I got a PhD. I became a professor of Sanskrit. Now I teach others and they can chant and all that. They know all the Upanishads, Brahma Sutras, but not to reach God, but to get to curiosity, to learn. But he says the fourth one who is Gyani, who comes to me for me. He does not go to Bhagwan asking for any relief from suffering, any wealth. He does not even go for knowledge, curiosity. He goes to Bhagavan because I want you. I do not want to use you to get some. So Bhagavan says all three are good, nothing wrong. You know, you come to me for asking for relief from suffering, for, you know, progress, for knowledge, that's good. But the one who is the most dear to me, Jnani Atmaiva Me Mataha. The Jnani is my own self because he wants me for my sake. He does not want, it's like, a girl loves a boy and she loves him for his sake. Another one, you know, says, oh, this guy has a lot of money. You know, if I marry him, then I'll become a millionaire. So then her love is not unconditional. Her love is conditional. And the moment the guy doesn't have money, she'll leave him. You know, tomorrow his money is gone. He loses in the stock market. She will leave. So similarly, our love for God should be unconditional love. Not that if I get it, I love you. If I don't, I won't love you. So that is what the essence of this verse is. That one who sees me everywhere, I am never separated from him. So Tvam and Tat. So that, me and that God. Now the third one is how me and that God can be together. So similarly, our love for God should be unconditional love. Not that if I get it, I love you. If I don't, I won't love you. So that is what the essence of this verse is. That one who sees me everywhere, I am never separated from him. So Tvam and Tat. So that, me and that God. Now the third one is how me and that God can be together. How practically we can reach God. So that is the last verse, verse number 31. Sarva bhuta sthitam yo maam.
Sarva bhuta sthitam
भजत एकत्वमास्थितः सर्वथा वर्तमानोऽपि स योगी मयि वर्तते. टुगेदर सर्वभूतस्थितं यो मां भजत एकत्वमास्थितः सर्वथा वर्तमानोऽपि स योगी मयि वर्तते. सो सर्वभूतस्थितं मां, व्हेन ही टॉक्स अबाउट मी, भगवान, एज वी सेड, ही इज टॉकिंग अबाउट दैट टोटल ब्रह्मन कॉन्शियसनेस. सर्वभूतस्थितं, I am there in all beings. Sthita means stationed, established. And he, what does the this yogi do? Bhajati. Bhajati means he worships me. Ekatvam asthitaha. He worships me as oneness, as one. So he's established in this oneness and then he worships me. So we'll talk about what is the meaning of worshipping. So he sees oneness in all. Sarvatha vartamanopi. Sarvatha, everywhere vartamanapa. Whatever this person may be doing, sa yogi mai vartate. He is in me. Whatever the job this person is doing, wherever this person is, he may be living in the forest, he may be living in the palace, but what, maybe a doctor, engineer, lawyer, a swami, a teacher, or even a beggar. But if he sees me as oneness in all, then he lives in me. So this, the most important word is bhajati. So what is bhajati? Bhajati wo bhajanam, bhajan karna. So we think it's just like singing bhajans. You know, that is part of it. Singing bhajans is very good and chanting the name of the Lord. But bhajati does not only mean chanting the name of the Lord or singing bhajans. What it means is doing his service. My every action should be a service of God and constantly remembering God. So singing bhajans is good, but then bringing that knowledge into service. So serving the world as God, that is true bhajan of the Lord. So true remembering the Lord is serving the Lord. So I was listening to a very beautiful example. Like there is a old building, right, which is totally fallen down in bad shape, more than 100-year-old building. Nobody has taken care. And so somebody buys that land, right? And that building, now that building is no use to him because it is old and he wants to break it. So he'll bring this wrecking ball, you know, this huge ball that comes with this machine. It hits the, you know, that building and destroys it. Or he'll bring a bulldozer and destroy the building, flatten it. And then once he'll clean all that, then he brings the material and he creates a brand new building, right? Multi-story building with many floors, and then he can sell all the apartments and make a lot of money. So similarly, you and I have this old building which is full of all kind of dirt and impurity, you know, anger, greed, jealousy, kaam, krodh, mad, lobh, matsarya. You know, all these negativity. So what they say, that take the wrecking ball of knowledge, use this knowledge and destroy the, get the bulldozer of this knowledge and destroy the old Anil, the old Govindji, the old Barbara, that was full of all these negativities, destroy that with this knowledge and then build a new home, build a new you, you know, with all this knowledge, I become a better person, I become more loving, I become more kind, I become more compassionate. So this knowledge is like a wrecking ball that will destroy all your old habits and create new habits. All my negative vasanas will be destroyed and positive tendencies. And then you see the oneness. We have already talked about that. So when such a person, say he goes on a pilgrimage, right? He goes to say all these Chardham Yatra, even though God is in all those places, he never loses sight of God is with me. So constantly remembering God in all situations. But that seems to be very difficult. You know, it's very hard for us. So Gurudev gives a very beautiful example. He says, suppose a person is very ill. What you do, you put him in the hospital. 3 weeks he stays in the hospital. He's very, very sick. And so he's getting all the medical treatment and all that. And then finally he recovers. You know, he had infection, so he was wearing a mask and all that. And finally, after 3-4 weeks, he's fully recovered. Then you don't say, oh, you have to stay in the hospital. Then you can go around and do whatever you want. So similarly, you and I at this moment are sick. But when we get this knowledge, then no matter where we go, we will be fine. So whatever job this person may do, and we have so many examples, you know, the Janak Maharaj, he was living in a palace and he was realized, while Buddha was going from door to door begging, you know, but he was equally enlightened. Or some maybe even acting like a madman, you know, or like Mirabai. It's not restricted to one sex, one community, one race. Enlightened people are there in all religions. They are there in all races, all colors. It's not only Brahmins. Even we find so many in our Hindus, so many low caste people became enlightened masters. So it is not the property of one person. In fact, Ved Vyasji, and they said such a person can then work. We have this idea, you know, person who is enlightened becomes useless. He will just stay all day and meditate in the forest. No, Ved Vyasji was an enlightened master. He wrote entire Mahabharata. He wrote the Brahma Sutras. He wrote the Bhagavad Gita. He organized all the Vedas. So much work this one individual could do. And Sri Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, he tells Arjuna, he says, I am the Lord of the three universes. I have nothing to do. But when I have taken avatar as a human being, it is my duty to work. And so he actually, Gurudev in his commentary said, he was sitting in front of Arjuna's chariot. All the arrows could hit him first. And he was driving his chariot like a chauffeur. Even though he was not only Lord of the universe, he was the king of Mathura. It was not that he was an ordinary, but Arjuna said, I want you to be my driver. He said, okay. And at night, he would take the horses. After Arjuna would go to sleep, he would take the horses in the stable, wash them, dress their wounds, and then go to sleep. And he would sleep with the other drivers, with the other charioteers. He was not sleeping in any palace. So the point is that whatever job you are doing, if you do it with the right understanding, then even Vedas cannot say anything to this individual because he goes beyond the Vedas. It does not mean that when they say he can do whatever he wants or wherever he wants, it's not that he will do the wrong thing. When he has this understanding, his actions will be always pure. But he works with the right knowledge. So when we say God is in all beings, then why is the difference? Like the chair doesn't talk. If the chair was talking or able to walk, it would have walked out of the class long time ago. It's bada boring, I'm not understanding anything. But the chair is still sitting. So what is the difference between chair and us and the enlightened master? You know, there are three stages. One is a chair or a, you know, table or something. Second is a living being, like a dog, cat, humans, like us. And the third is the enlightened master, who is in a category by himself, no longer is in the same category as us. So in the chair, it is as Sat. You know, they say God is Sat, Chit, Anand. You must have heard that, Sat, Chit, Anand. So Sat means existence. So chair just exists. Chair doesn't think. Chair is existence. So in the chair, God is existence. In you and me and in the dog and cat and all, it is chit. It is mind. We all have a mind, right? We have an evolved mind. Dog or cat may have a less mind. Plant has even less. But even plant has a mind. They also have chit and anand because they know they have to grow towards sunlight. And they have done studies where in plants, where one plant is kept with beautiful music, other one is kept with harsh noises. And the plant with the good music grows better. So in all of them, all of us, it is chit. But in the enlightened master, it is anand. It is bliss. And that bliss is not dependent on objects. For you and me, If I get some food I like, I'm happy, or I get a thing I like, or a job I like, or a person I like. But an enlightened master revels in his own bliss. So there it is, anand. In you and me, what the joy we get is pleasure, it's happiness. It is not anand. So Bhagwan is sat in all the living objects, in the inanimate objects. In us, it is sat and chit. And in the enlightened master, it is sat, chit and anand. So that is what I already talked about, Janak. And just as an actor, when he is given a role, whether he is given the role as a beggar or as a king, he performs both roles very well. One time he may win an Oscar for doing a beggar's role, next time for a king's role. But he inside he knows, I am neither the actor, I am neither the beggar nor the king, I am the actor. Like Shah Rukh Khan, for example, if he is playing a role. So similarly, you and I, whatever role we have been given, we play, but understand that I am that divinity and all are that divinity. When I say Aham Brahmasmi, everybody is Brahman. So that universal message is what we get from these three verses. I hope I was able to convey them. It's a little difficult subject. I tried my best with examples and stories. So we have a few minutes, about 10 minutes. If there's any question, something was not clear.
Maybe obvious, but I find myself wondering, whether, as you come up the scale of different beings, if IQ is the same as intellect. Like, if it's a smarter person, they're going to get there first.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they have better intellect.
Not, you mean among human beings?
Yeah, like Einstein or Leonardo da Vinci.
No, not necessarily. No, not necessarily. Intellect sometimes can become an obstacle. A rishi is different, but an intellect can become an obstacle because then you start thinking too much. On the other hand, a simple person who says, okay, God alone is, and totally surrenders himself, will reach faster. So it's not a guarantee. Yes, to understand this knowledge, you need an intellect, but to reach God, no. Even a simple person who is able to see what God asks for is love and surrender, and the intellect should take you towards love and surrender. But if you get so caught in the intellectual discussions that you forget why I am studying this, I am studying this so that I should understand that my intellect cannot take me there. Intellect, no matter how brilliant, you may be Einstein, you may be a rishi, you may be anybody, Galileo, intellect will not take you there. You have to drop the intellect and go beyond the intellect. Like the staircase will take you to the second floor, but staircase is not the second floor. You have to leave the staircase, then only you can walk around on the second floor. So intellect is right like that staircase. Intellect can take you there, but ultimately you cannot say, I'm holding on to the staircase, I love the staircase because it brought me to the second floor. No. You have to leave the staircase, then you can enjoy the view of the second floor. So the intellect can become an obstacle on the spiritual journey. So one has to be very cautious and not think that because I am more intelligent and somehow I'm more superior to this person and I'm closer to God. That's no guarantee. There was, like this Tisargdat Maharaj, I've talked about him. He used to make bidis, he used to make handmade cigarettes. And his guru came and told him, you are that. And he said, I am that. He said, yeah, you are that. Guru must have seen something and guru left. And for 2.5 years, as he was making bidis, I am that, I am that. How can I be that? What is that? 2.5 years he realized. He had never went to school, never studied, had no intel. He was a very simple, not even high school graduate. And after he became an enlightened master, if you read his book, I Am That, you can't understand it. The level of talking that he is able to is unbelievable. And this person didn't even pass high school. But if you read the book, I Am That, at least now I may be able to understand. But a few years back, when I tried to read it, I was lost. Because So intellect is not a guarantee. Intellect helps to understand, but may not help you to realize. But that's a very good question. Very good point. Thank you. One has to be very cautious because intellect can create ego that I am somehow superior, and that is right away you go away from God. The moment you say I am something, you are away from Him. You say I am nothing. In fact, I heard just very recently, he said the greatest, this is a very powerful statement, he says the greatest obstacle between me and God is me. Me is the greatest obstacle between me and God. And that's something we need to think about. That by myself, I am nothing. See, until you come to that understanding, by myself, I am nothing, then and then alone you will reach out to God and say, you are everything. So that I have to make it very clear. I am not able to do anything without God's grace, which is true. You know, can we talk without His grace? Can we think? Can we feel? No. Hands, can we move? Can the eyes see? No, nothing can do. Nothing is possible. Sorry, a long answer to your short question.
I'm probably overthinking it, but that, you know, the phrase blows my mind. You know, I just don't understand that. And I wrote down, it's like a girl who loves a man for himself, or a man who loves a woman for
herself, not for her father, her wealth.
Not for her wealth.
Right.
So it's not, so you love God not for what He can give to you, not for the suffering that He can take away from you.
You love God for His sake. I want God and God alone.
And so, and then you said, and I get this, you just surrender. I get
yes.
The surrender. I don't know how the two fit together. I don't know how you get to the point where you can love God for
love unconditionally, like in the world. Do you love your child because what they can give you? No, you love them unconditionally. Even tomorrow they are not very good, you still love them. So the ability to love God regardless of what happens, it's and not that I only will love God if I can get this. And if I don't get this, then I don't love God. Of course, when you're suffering, you go pray to Him. There's nothing wrong with prayer. But the highest prayer is, God, I want you. I want you. And that can only happen when that I goes away and you alone remains. That is surrender. That the one who is seeking, the seeker goes away and only the sought remains. That's why I said, no, the greatest obstacle between me and God is me. When I disappear, then God alone remains. So that is surrender. That is surrender. That by myself I am nothing and you only can do it. Because ultimately we cannot get enlightened by ourselves. We can only go up to a particular point and then you wait. And then say, God, this is all I can do. Rest is your job. So that is surrender. The feeling of hopelessness or helplessness. And all saints come to that. If you read the saints, even the Christian saints, they all describe that. There was a lady saint, I forget her name, but in her work, she talks about this extreme despair and extreme, you know, sense of hopelessness and helplessness and anguish, and she's crying, and then finally she reaches us. Like Eckhart Tolle also, he went to an extreme state of total depression. So
I heard you call the Black Night of the Soul.
Yes, the Black Night. That's why they say the night is darkest before the dawn. The Black Night, where the soul says, I myself can do nothing. And then they cry out, and then God Himself picks you up. Yeah.
I think you talked about this before. And it always bothers me, the idea, okay, so if you see God, everything, everyone in God, and then you see someone in society who you think is really wrong, not, what is, what do you owe society to go out of your way? I mean, I understand if someone's coming along right then you have to make a split-second decision as to what you're going to do, but I mean, do you go out and run for office so you can defeat another politician?
Yeah, if somebody is crooked, yeah, you can. Would you do whatever you can. You know, if you can stop that person, you can. If not, notify the police if somebody is doing something illegal. And otherwise, if it's not pertaining to me, if somebody is like, you know, beat goes through a red light without stopping, you know, it's okay. Sooner or later, the law will catch him. So you can't become the policeman for the whole world. Yeah, if you can stand for election and defeat the crooked politician, that's wonderful. If not, at least in the next election, don't vote for him. So do what you can to make the world a better place. See, what we can do is we have our corner of the world. And I can only clean my corner. I cannot clean the whole world. So at least where I am, let me make that place clean. See, we can be a lamp. We cannot be the sun. You know, the sun can illumine the whole universe. All I am is a small lamp that I can, at least in my corner of the neighborhood where I live, make it the world a better place. So do what I can. Ultimately, it is his world and he will take care of it. So that understanding one should have. To get upset about what's happening in the Middle East or what's happening in, you know, some slaves or some women are being raped. You feel bad and you pray for them, of course. Oh God, please take care of them. But if there's nothing I can do, I can't get upset about it. I just pray and, you know, just pray for peace and pray for wisdom, you know, for these people who are torturing and doing bad things. Prayer is a very powerful weapon. So just pray. Just pray to God.
I mean, could the guy that chops off people's heads be enlightened?
Probably not.
You know, we don't do that much.
No, no. And you mean as a job? Is he doing it as a job?
Yeah, I mean, can he be?
Yeah, if he, like, there was a butcher. No, there was there was a butcher who was an enlightened master. There's a story of, I can tell you some other time. He used to chop meat and he was enlightened. So, yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, whatever job, if you're doing it as God's work, you are enlightened. But generally, an enlightened master won't do bad things. He won't do things to hurt others. But whatever, like his, in that butcher's case, his family were butchers, his father, grandfather. So they used to chop meat. So that's what he used to always do. I can tell you the story some other time, maybe next time or whatever.
An executioner,
like a judge.
Hopefully
he's been given a job to executioner or a judge who condemns people to the death. You know, like the judge who says, okay, you can get the death penalty or not. So he's sending people to death, but he could be an enlightened master because he's not doing it with the favor of, okay, I like this person because he's white, so I won't condemn him, and he's black, I will. So then you are, you know, then you are not enlightened. But if you do whatever job you are, that's what he says, whatever job he is doing, if he does it with the best of his ability, he's with me. So yogi mai vartate, if he, whatever job he may be doing, if he sees me everywhere, whether in black, white, whatever, in everybody, he sees me, then he's with me. Yes. So you cannot judge people by their job, but actually, it's very hard to tell who is enlightened. Only an enlightened master will know another enlightened master. You and I, we can't tell, you know, because we judge by external appearances. Somebody wearing orange, having a long beard is more evolved than somebody wearing a suit and tie. It doesn't have to be, you know, there's no connection. I mean, yeah, a person who is devoting full time with wearing orange clothes, has given up the world, is meditating, there's more chance for him to reach enlightenment than a person who is working in an office. But you can't just judge by that. That's why they say the more time you spend in this field, the more you will progress. It's like anything else. You know, the more time you spend in engineering, the better engineer you'll become. The more time you spend in medicine, the better doctor. So same way, giving time. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschit dukha bhavave. Om shanti shanti shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Hari Om. Thank you.